Hello, and welcome to Tactical Startup. In this episode, we're going to be talking with Ashley Nichols. She attended UNLV for undergraduate and studied business management. Then she started her MBA, and from after that, she moved to San Diego and attended California Western School of Law, where she obtained her JD. She now works as a financial consultant and splits her time between Las Vegas and San Diego. And I'm very excited to have her on my podcast to discuss finance, business matters, that type of thing, as well as like business planning, business financial planning. So let's get started, shall we? You're listening to Tactical Startup, a podcast dedicated to building amazing businesses. I am your host, Taylor Darcy. In this podcast, we explore ways to innovate, improve, and level up your business through sales, marketing, automation, and business planning. Successful businesses pivot when times are bad and stay the course when times are good. We will have guests from different walks of life to help you see that success is not only possible, but even probable, no matter when or where you start. Through hard work and strategic planning, you can have the entrepreneurial life you've always dreamed. Tune in weekly to level up your business. Welcome, Ashley. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So we are filming this on a Friday afternoon. So it's a fun time because you're like, probably I want to go home. But thank you so much for joining me. I wanted to have you on, and I appreciate you willing to join us because we did go to law school together, but we have very different paths. And so I wanted my listeners to not only learn from you, but also have a little bit of insight into your story, because I think stories are the most interesting. So tell me more than what, you know, your bio was. Tell me about yourself.
Okay, so, well, I am born and raised in Las Vegas. I attended UNLV for my undergrad. I did do a year of my MBA as well. Now, I went to college a little bit late. So when I decided to go back, that was during the recession. Everyone was going. I was also doing real estate at that time. So there was the dual degrees, the MBA, JD. So I just kind of decided to take the LSAT one day. I was just trying to kind of get ahead of the curve. I got waitlisted at UNLV and I got into California Western School of Law. So I moved to San Diego to attend law school. Unfortunately, couldn't transfer my MBA credit, so I still have to finish that. But I think probably first, I don't even know, probably week into law school, it definitely was not for me. So, but you know, as well as I do, it takes so much energy and time and effort to even get accepted. Right. So you're taking the LSAT. So you have to study for that. And then you're sending out the applications, you're getting the letters of recommendation, and you're just putting together the whole package. So with all that being said, and then the fact that I moved, just to attend, I just decided I'm just going to ride this out. 3 years is going to pass anyways. Get as much, you know, knowledge as I can behind it. And yeah, that's kind of what I did. So
this is not meant to pick on you at all. So please don't take it that way. But have you heard of the sunk cost fallacy by chance?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, yes. So for our listeners, Ashley fell prey to that. And a lot of people do. So this is not a judgment on them. I see business owners do this a lot. And the sunk cost fallacy, for those of you who don't know what a sunk cost fallacy is that the idea that if you've already invested time and money into something, that you should continue doing it, even if it doesn't work. And a lot of small businesses do that. And it's, again, it isn't, I do it. I'm not judging here. I've done it where I'm like, oh, I've already spent so much money, or I've already done this. I need to see it through. In some instances, that makes sense. And I'm not, again, not judging for it, but it's true. But you did. You fell prey to it. We're all guilty of it. Or the old phrase, in for a penny, in for a dime, or in for a dime, in for a dollar, right? Like, you've already invested so much time and energy into it that you're like, I have to keep going. So,
I will say, though, that the there's something that needs to be said about having a JD, whether you use it or not. It's not only, you know, obviously you're always wanting to educate yourself no matter what, right? And right. yes, there's a huge cost that comes to the end of the student loans are still coming in, right? But when I, even though I even went the finance route, whenever anyone knows that I have a JD, there's like this instant, almost like, oh, you do? It's like a weird, it's the weirdest thing to me, but I could just be, I could be talking about something that has nothing to do with law. And the minute they're like, oh, you have a JD, it just first, I don't know if there's like some prestige that comes behind it or whatever it is, but people, they assume that I know way more than I do sometimes. And only just simply because of the degree, you know?
Right.
So we'll say that it has opened a few doors for me in that aspect. And actually even with the firm that I'm with now, the main goal for him was to hire attorneys that also wanted to do finance. Just because then at that point in time, you know, when we're garnering clientele and stuff like that, we have that, we both have that background. It's something we could relate to and it's kind of, it's easier to navigate.
So you got your MBA at, or you're working on your MBA at UNLV. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I did the first year of my MBA at UNLV. The Lee School of Business. And I loved the program, honestly. And when I came here at that time, that MBA program didn't have like online classes. So it's not like I could have finished it online and then still continued, you know, the JD. And then the problem I ran into was you have to have at least 50% or more of your credits from the school that you're getting your degree from, right? So when I went to transfer over a whole year, USD, SDSU was like, no, we'll take six. And I'm like, I am not a resident. I already paid for a whole year. So it just didn't make sense to me at that point to finish it. I mean, I, you know, so at some point I will, but.
Yeah, I actually teach business law at Pepperdine in their MBA program. So you would have been, or you could have been theoretically, one of my students, but obviously with the JD, you know more than most of my MBA students do for that purpose. But so what attracted you to law then? Because it's not typical, like, unless you're a glutton for punishment, doing MBA plus law school. I mean, like I am, I have an MBA and law school, and the bar. And so, yeah, I'm a bit of a glutton on that part. What prompted that? Why did you want to make that change?
I think, you know, at the time I was doing real estate, and I was also like working in the casinos in Las Vegas. And I was like, I'm just going to go to school. So I thoroughly enjoyed my undergrad. I thoroughly enjoyed my MBA. And like I said, I just kind of wanted to get ahead of the curve because at that time I felt like everyone was going back to school. And if they had already had a bachelor's, they were getting their MBAs. And my family, and I think most law students, this is a thing. My family since birth basically was like, you should be a lawyer. And it was always like kind of like put in your ear. And it, ironically enough, I was going to a chiropractor at one point and he was talking to me about one of his clients who practiced personal injury. And he's like, I think you'd be great at it. And I just, I don't know. There was that thing where I was like, all right, how am I going to make myself different? And I walked out and I remember calling my mom and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to take the LSAT. And she's like, okay. So I had just taken the GMAT. And I had already seen the dual degree. So it was kind of, I was already in my head. And yeah, it was just as simple as that. Like he just said, you're good at it. And I knew my family had said it all along. And I'm going to go to law school.
It's interesting how families can influence you both positively and negatively. So, so what was it about law school that you didn't care for?
So many things. and you would know this too, because you did a whole MBA program. I feel as though the structure of the programs are just so different. MBA is very much, there's a lot of group work. There's a lot of, you know, camaraderie. There's a lot of, everyone helps each other out. law school was very, I don't know how to say the word, but it's like, there's a lot of competition there, right? In our school in particular, they cut the bottom 30% after the first year. So I felt like the students and like the mentality and the environment was just very stuffy and almost it was just competitive, you know, not as friendly, I don't think, as my MBA was. And quite boring, to be quite honest. There weren't very many classes that I was like, yes, this is what I get to, you know, it wasn't it very exciting. So, I mean, I took a domestic violence class that I loved. I loved all my crim classes. I just couldn't see myself being a criminal attorney, on either side, right? So it was just I did take a forensic evidence class that was extremely interesting, but I just couldn't do it. And to be also very candid, I couldn't see myself when I did my internships, I couldn't see myself being one behind a desk all day long. And then two, I couldn't see myself being a litigator at all. Like I interned for a personal injury attorney and he also did elder abuse. And he was just he always stressed. And every time we had court and I would go sit in, it was like he was just stressed, you know, and he loved his job. He was super passionate. He was really good at it. But I just told him, I'm like, I wouldn't want to live like that, you know. I'm just so yeah, it just kinda didn't fit me, you know.
And I think that that's so wise. And I think, you know, you had one perception of what was going to happen, and then when reality hit, you realized. And I think that's a wise choice in the respect that you completed your degree. And I say this because one of the problems with our education, especially our higher education, is people start degrees and then don't finish them. And what ends up happening is that they don't command the salary that goes with the degree because they didn't complete it, but they have the debt that they're now having to pay. So I would encourage you to get that MBA taken care of, simply because not only can you add that to your resume, but also for that reason, because I'm sure you're paying for it, but you haven't received, unfortunately, those three little initials make a difference in people's mind. And so going back and taking care of that. So let's kind of shift gears. So now that you're not an attorney, you don't want to be, and that's perfectly fine. And I'm a big fan of, if you don't like what you do, if you don't love what you do, and if you can't deal and you don't want to do it, then don't do it, right? There's too many people that just kind of like, well, I've already done it, so I have to do this. And it creates a miserable experience for everyone, right? Clients aren't happy, you're not happy, nobody's happy when you do that. So take us through, now you're doing tummy.
Well, I do quite a few things, but primarily my, Monday through Friday job is finance. So I do personal and business financial planning. And actually what ended up happening is one of my friends from law school called me one day and he's like, I know you don't want to do law, but I'm working with this finance firm and I think this is something that's up your alley. I think you'd enjoy it. And to be quite honest, at that time, I just said, I need to figure out my career path. I need, what am I going to do? You know? So I took the meeting with the CEO of the firm. It's called Westpac Wealth Partners. And I kind of just went in there. He asked me what I wanted out of, you know, of a career. Like, what do I want to do every day? And I said exactly what I just told you. I don't want to clock in every day. I don't want to sit behind a desk. I want to build my own clientele. I want the autonomy and that fit. And I also wanted to find a way where, you know, my services could help people. I think that's why most of us get into the career paths we do is because we're essentially helping people, whether you're in law, whether, you know, you're in the medical field. For me, it's finance. So everything lined up and I took the position and now I've just been there ever since. So
Cool. So what type of, what do you offer? What's, I know you said planning and business, but I know with, so, and I'm playing the fool here because I know, like, do you do stocks? Do you do, what is it you're planning? What are you helping them with?
Well, so that's a very good question because there's all types of financial advisors out there, right? So typically when I say I do, you know, financial advising, I feel as though people look at me like I'm this used car salesman, like you just want my money, you know? And I'm like, no, it's not that way, you know? And unfortunately in the financial industry, there's a huge lack of literacy when it comes to when it comes to finance, there's a lack of literacy behind it. And then on top of that, there are some really bad financial advisors out there, unfortunately, you know, and their gain is more the money than the actual helping the clients and caring about, you know, their path and their goals and all that. So with that being said, we are a full service, truly holistic financial planning firm. So what we do is we look at someone's personal balance sheet and their, and if they're a business owner, their business balance sheet. And we look at, you know, what they own, what they owe, which also gives us their net worth. But then we also look at, you know, their cash flow, and we look at what taxes look like for them. And then we look at the protection piece, which is, okay, if you own a home, do you have something as simple as umbrella insurance, which is not something that I can offer in-house, but I do make sure that all of my clients, if it makes sense, that they have that put in place. I'll even look over, you know, someone's auto insurance and make sure that they have the correct coverage in place. I don't do auto insurance, you know, but I will refer out, or I will give my two cents on the matter, you know. We look at, you know, do you have disability put in place? Do you have life insurance put in place? You know, what are your short, mid, long-term goals? And are the financial decisions that you're making right now going to put you in alignment with achieving those goals? So I think that is very different than most when they think of financial advisors. I think it's very different than what most think. Now, as I was telling you before, you know, business owners, at some point, your personal balance sheet and your business balance sheet, they're going to overlap. And so we want to make sure that you're taking advantage of the correct tax strategies. Are you shifting your income? Do you have the right retirement put in place? I feel like business owners, a lot of them don't think about it, but you're in charge of your retirement. No one's giving you that 401k. No one's putting money aside for you. You know, that's all for you. But at the same time, you can take advantage of the different tax deductions that come along with that, you know. And unfortunately, a lot of my business owners, what the comment that I get is, well, I write off everything. I can write everything off. You know, I bought, my CPA said, buy a car, buy a, I don't know, a jet ski, and then write it off, you know. So it's like, and the problem with that is, yes, sometimes that does make sense. Sometimes you have to buy stuff for your business to lower the taxes, right? But there are different strategies that you can put in play where when you take that type of route, right, to deduct your taxes, that money is leaving your pocket. It's leaving your business, right? You don't have it in place. But there are certain things that you can put in place where the money doesn't leave. It's with you. It's building. It could be for retirement. It could be for other things, but then it also equates to a tax write-off. So it's my job to look at someone's overall picture and say, okay, what are we looking at? What do we need to capitalize on? What holes do you have in your balance sheet that we need to fill?
Right. So. I think you bring up in fact, this was in a previous podcast guest when we talked about writing off everything and that's great from a tax perspective, but and the one she used was her company that she was advising. The CPA had advised to take $1 million buy $1 million piece of equipment for the thing, and she asked, and she's like, do you actually use that equipment? No.
Right.
Then you literally spent $1 million on something to save $400,000.
Right.
And no, it doesn't make sense. And then I brought up the point. Now I want to, just in case people are listening to that one and not this one, or this one and not that one, that then what happens also is that because you're taxed poor, you're also loan poor. Like when you decide to go get a loan for something, if you don't claim it on your taxes, or if you've deducted everything down to zero, then you also can't get loans.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, okay, now, if you have enough cash flow where loans aren't necessary, that's fine. But that's not true in most cases, right? If maybe you want to go buy a house, and a house is not something that most business owners can say, oh yeah, I'm going to pay myself $1 million this year so I can get the deduction and then go buy a house, right? Like that's not what most business owners do or are able to do. And so you're being tax wise, but like overall strategy poor, right? Like you're really not getting what you're. It's great for taxes. It's terrible for other areas of your life. That's what it comes down to.
Absolutely. And so that's why the very first thing I do when I sit down with my clients, I say, okay, what are your short, mid, long-term goals? Because if that's a goal to buy property, to buy land, whatever it is, I need to take out a loan for something, then yeah, that's something we want to be cognizant of, right? And then again, to go back to that, there are strategies where you can put money somewhere, let's say it's like a pension plan or something along those lines, where it is a straight tax deduction, but it still stays on your balance sheet. So it still shows as the income, right? So it doesn't put you in a place where then you wouldn't be able to qualify for something. So if I know, if I have a clear understanding of where my client wants to go, then that's where I'll know where to pivot right next, right? So it's very important for us to get all the information. And it's funny because a lot of my clients are not used to that type of, they're not used to true planning.
Right.
And I will preface also, it's very important on what CPA you use, because there are CPAs who just file and then there's CPAs who actually strategize, you know? And so, and I tend to try to build my stronger relationships with, you know, it's with really good CPAs, but I also vet them. Like who are your main clientele? Like there's some that solely work with real estate. There's some that solely work with, you know, whatever other business there is. Maybe it's like tech or something like that. And so they're super knowledgeable in that. Right. I have a couple of clients who own their own production studios. So they need someone they need someone who has the knowledge in that industry to know what that looks like, right?
Right.
So I say good CPAs. I do work with estate planning attorneys because I do make sure that my clients, if it makes sense, do you have a will? Do you have a trust put in place? Do you have investment property? You know, do you have children? What do we need to look at as far as estate planning goes? So ironically enough, I work with attorneys, which is, I did think, I was like, maybe I do want to take the bar and I'll do estate planning. And then I was like, no, not worth it.
And I can certainly understand that. The bar is not my idea of a good time. And I'm so grateful that I passed on my first attempt, because I've known of people that have taken it 4 and 5 and 12 times, and one person took it 42 times, 43 times.
Oh my gosh.
I couldn't imagine doing that. It's just insane. You know, it's so hard.
You know, it is. And so like we discussed earlier, I did take it, you know, so my scholarship was contingent on me taking the bar.
Right.
So reluctantly, I maybe studied. And for those of you who don't know, most study for the bar for about 3 months prior to, but I maybe did about 3 weeks. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to go in and take it and see what happens, you know, with no, I didn't have any expectation of passing. That would have been amazing.
That'd be pretty impressive, actually. That'd be a great story. Not going to lie.
I would have been impressed as well.
That would have been awesome.
But, you know, so I did, and I had someone that lived in my building. He took it 10 times.
Oh,
so
wow.
I just think, yeah. And I don't know. I don't know if it's, you know, do you change the way you study? Do you change the program that you, that you're studying through? Do you need a tutor? You know, I don't know if there's like, maybe it's just not for you, you know, I don't have the answer for that, but to me, it's like, if you've taken it that many times and it's still not passing, there has to be something that you have to change, you know, and figure out what the next steps are.
I agree.
But yeah, that test is not, it's not nice.
No, it's not. It's not at all. Yeah. What I did was I talked with, before I took the bar and before I even got there, I talked with my friends I talked with the people that had passed the bar, and I talked with people that didn't pass the bar. And what I did is I came up with a strategy based on what people did that passed it versus what people did who didn't pass it. And so I wrote out like a bar, passing tips and things that so to be able to write down, because I had people that were like, oh, I missed it by 5 points, or I missed it by 2 points. And those are the people that you feel the most for.
Right. Yeah.
Because if you fail it by 10 points, yeah, if you fail by 10 points, you're like, okay, you know, I didn't do very good. 10 points is a lot, especially on the bar. But it's not when you fail by 1 or 2 points, you're like, man, if I'd have just picked A over B, or if I'd have picked, you know, C over D, or whatever it was, you know, if I'd have just remembered this one thing, then I would have done better. And so my heart goes to the people that fail it by a small number rather than a large number. Because the large number, it's like, okay, I wasn't going to pass even if I'd have done X. But what I did was, is I said, okay, there's obviously trends, right? There's reasons why people pass and why people don't. Not to go off on too big of a tangent here, but success leaves clues. Success leaves footprints, right? And in any walk of life. And I think that that's true of business. It's true of law. And so so many people are trying to reinvent the wheel. And the reality is there's no reinventing, right? There can be iterations and modifications and movements, changes. I mean, you look at BlackBerry versus iPhone, right? Versus Apple.
Right.
You know, is it fundamentally a different product? No, it's not. No. It's a phone. It texts. It has an electronic keyboard instead of a hard keyboard. But fundamentally, it does pretty much the same things. Does it do it better? Are there apps and things like that? Yes. But it's an iteration of it. It's not a completely brand new thing that hasn't existed before. And I think a lot of business owners get stuck in that process of thinking, oh, I have to do it completely different, right?
Right.
The reality is you're going to be more successful if you do the right things consistently than you are if you do the right things inconsistently, or worse, if you're doing the wrong things inconsistently, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, the goal is always to improve on something. So tell me about... Like, what is your favorite thing that most people don't know about financial planning?
You know, for me, it's fun for me to be able to find different strategies for people that they didn't know about. And so, for instance, I've done presentations for groups of realtors, right? I work with everyone, basically. I don't discriminate. So, but with my realtors, you know, I say, you know, do you guys know how you can leverage? So let's say our real estate agents, they have an S corp, right? But a lot of them do real estate investing. So, and with that, they manage their own investment properties. So I'll come in and I'll say, you know, do you guys know that the property that you are managing can be an LLC, and then your real estate business can be the S corp, and you can leverage the two and pay yourself from one or the other, and their deduction that way, you know? So it's fun to just kind of like sit there and just be very creative with now, don't get me wrong. You do have to stay within the guidelines, right? You don't want your clients getting audited by any means, but it's really fun. Or there's something called the Augusta rule, where you can rent your house out for up to 14 days, no more than that. You can actually rent it out, and it's a full deduction. And that rental income is tax-free, essentially. So I also love showing people. So our firm is really big on strategizing when it comes to taxes and retirement and stuff like that. So we use this three bucket approach where we're like, okay, tax-free, tax, and tax deferred. And we want to, it's not which one are we going to use? It's how are we going to diversify all your money into all three buckets to make sure that when we retire, we're good. You know, we're not completely relying on the market. We have tax-free strategy for you. And then I'll say, like, with my personal, clients, like when they're not necessarily looking at business, but when they're looking at their personal side. So for me, it's a huge deal to, so I don't, you wouldn't know this about me, but I took care of my dad for, I don't know, 10 years, maybe a little bit more than that. So he had dementia and it was quite challenging when I moved to San Diego, right? Because he lived in Las Vegas. So I was constantly going back and forth, like taking him to doctor's appointments. Thank God for Postmates. Postmates him groceries and stuff like that. But it was a huge financial burden because growing up, my family was very middle class, right? We didn't, money was not an issue. We weren't rich by any means, but we didn't struggle. And my dad, unfortunately, you know, at a certain age was forced to retire because dementia set in. So he didn't have any financial education, right? So he had a 401k, but when the recession hit, as most did, they got scared and they pulled everything out. So there was no retirement plan put in place. So again, you know, it was on me to pay for a lot of his medications and right. And stuff like that. So he was just, here he was at an age where he could no longer work and he was making Social Security. And wow. Let me tell you guys, Social Security is not even... My heart goes out to people who don't have family members to be able to help them because right. He was probably living on like $1,800 a month. That covers maybe rent, you right. know, and definitely do sense. That. Yeah. Right. And my dad was a veteran, but okay. He never used his VA benefits. And navigating that is nuts. Insane.
Nuts.
It yeah. is a nightmare. Yeah. So I kind of just... I just said, forget it. I don't even want the VA benefits. I'm just going to help you, you know? And so then when he passed, there was no life insurance put in place. So again, you know, it was on me to cover like funeral expenses and stuff like that. So when I sit down with my clients and they say, you know, when they don't see the value in properly investing their money, or they don't see the value in the proper protection that they need to put in place, I sit there and I tell them, listen, I have been in a place where I don't think that you would be comfortable with, you know, or I don't think you would want to put that burden on your family if you have one. So for me, I love being able to share that perspective because it really gets people to think like, oh right. yeah, this is important, you know? Yeah. And we don't just say, I don't just look at someone's balance sheet and say, okay, we're going to put your money here, here, and here, sign it, we'll open the account. I very much, and anybody in my firm, we're very big on educating our clients on right. how investments work, how life insurance works, how the different tax strategies work, and making sure that they know where their money is going. Right. You know, God forbid something happens with the market and they come back to me and they're like, you're fired. I'm losing all this money. I want to be able to, no, we went over this. We went over standard deviation.
Right.
It's your risk tolerance that's the issue. Like, right. That's what we need to fix, you know? So
it's true. So I wanted to touch on a couple of things that you were talking about. And I was like chomping at the bit on this one. So you have a personal experience with financial planning that a family member not having the proper protections in place and the burden that it was causing you. And so as part of that, you wanted to alleviate and help others so that they didn't experience that burden. And I think it's worth mentioning becoming an estate planning attorney would be very valuable in your line of work. I'm not suggesting you should have to go take the bar again, but point is
you that know, like, Taylor, can you give me all your tips on how to pass?
And I would be happy to do so. I give it freely. I don't charge for it. I think people that have enough things to spend their money on, and I would argue, and I will say this, I think mine is better than Themis and Barbary and all of them. And I say that because the way that they prepare you, I don't think they prepare you adequately. I think they fail and they're expensive. And I think that I do my part to improve access to the legal profession by doing this. But I don't want people to, the reason why I do it is, and I don't like impose it on people because I don't want people to think that, oh, that my way is always the right way. It's not, I think it is, but I don't like people, you know, if they want it, I'm happy to give it, but I don't like thrust it at people and say, here, you have to have this. But coming back to the thing, You know, it's so interesting, and this is one of those the reasons why I do this podcast is people don't think about like what happens when they die. Like they all, everybody's going to die, right? There's two things that are unavoidable: death and taxes is maybe, right? And so the problem is that what they don't understand is a little bit of estate planning now and or financial planning now is so much less expensive than dealing with the problems that happen once you die. Right? Because now you're introducing things like, do you die intestate? Do you have to probate a will? What are the costs? Do you have life insurance? What is that life and who is that life insurance going to? Are there so many things that go into this? And they think, oh, I'll do it later, right? Always later. But you never know when later becomes now, right? Like people die all the time for no reason. Right. And I don't mean that there's not a cause of death. I mean, like you're walking, you get in a car accident, you know, there's all sorts of things that happen. Tomorrow is not guaranteed. And so, you know, but and I say this to my business clients all the time. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure and sometimes 10 to 15 pounds of cure. Right. You have a good contract. You have a good business. You have good insurance. You have good all of these things that are taken care of. And guess what? Is it a guarantee that you won't get sued? No. But does it greatly diminish the chances of it happening? Yes.
Right.
If you have insurance to cover your losses, if you have a way to take care of things, and you do it ahead of time. My contracts are cheap relative to the cost of litigation. Like you really have to look at it, the value of what you're getting, not just on the cost that it is. Because if you're always focused on the cost of something and never the value, then you're missing out on the big picture. Because if I can save someone, even if they spend, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 on something, but I'm saving their family members or I'm saving them from the, you know, $50,000 to $60,000 worth of litigation, or if I'm saving a family member from having to deal with the crazy cost of probate, then that's worthwhile, right? Like, who do you want to deal with that expense? Do you want your family members that are grieving to have to wait 2 to 3 years for your will to be probated, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So, and I honestly, I love that you say that because I always tell my clients the same thing because they don't see the value behind things because they haven't had, maybe they haven't had the experiences, right? That we've had. And so I always say it's the low probability, high risk. That is what we are trying to accomplish here, right?
Right.
Especially, you know, I have clients, let's say in the medical field, and they're like, the hospital that I work for, they offer disability insurance. And I say, okay, let's look at what that actually means, you know, because they don't know your clients, and I would never expect them to know to be able to interpret the verbiage behind those contracts, right?
Right.
And I always say, like, I love when companies offer these benefits, but at the same time, I'm like, who's to say, what if something happens next week and they do a huge layoff? You can't carry those benefits over, right, you know? Right. So you need to make sure that you have the proper strategies put in place. And then for my younger clients who don't see, you know, the value in life insurance, I have a lot of them being like, I have young clients who will talk to their parents and say, these are the investments that I put in place. And I had one client in particular, her parents were like, you're in your 20s. Why do you need life insurance? And I said, okay.
Cheap. Sorry.
That's what I said. I said, listen, well, first I said, do your parents have life insurance? She said, no. I said, okay. I said, do your parents have investments? She said, no. I said, okay. I'm not speaking badly or poorly on your parents, but they just don't know what they don't know. Right. So I said, let's get them on a call and I'll explain everything. But I did give the example of one, you're young, right? So it's cheap.
Right.
Two, I have a sister who took out life insurance, thankfully, at 23, and no one knew she did it, right? I've only known until recently. And she has it's a rare heart disease, right? So, and now she has lupus. But by 27, she no longer qualifies for life insurance.
Right.
So her policy is what it is. It's not a great policy, you know?
Right.
So the only reason I know she has is she's my client now.
Right.
And I took a look at it and I said, you know, it sucks, but let's just manage this best we can, make sure that it stays in place indefinitely and go from there. But who would think at 27 that you wouldn't qualify for it anymore? You know, my sister played Olympic development soccer her whole life. She's athletic, never an issue. And then out
Yeah.
of nowhere, here comes, you know, she just unfortunately inherited the gene that nobody knew we had, you
Right.
know?
And it wasn't a thing until it was a thing, right? Like it was a
Absolutely.
non-issue. Here's a good one that most people don't know that they have, that they don't know that they have, that they have. If that makes sense. Yeah. So like I once upon a time I used to work for a credit union, and on their Visa cards, they would have accidental death and dismemberment insurance. And so the higher tiered, they would have the regular Visa, the gold, the platinum, and all that type of thing. And it would get up to $1 million worth of coverage. And most people don't look at their benefits of things like that. So buying on a credit card and then paying it off, right? Like that's the best advice. Things like that. So paying attention to those details, like calling your credit card companies and finding out like, oh, I'm broke. Well, I get you might be broke, and the chances of you dying in a plane accident, are fairly low, right? Statistically speaking, not likely, but possible, right? Like it's not zero. There is a number there. But the idea that, okay, I paid down my credit card with the cost of the ticket and then use the credit card to pay for the ticket to get to enact that plane goes down. And now all of a sudden you have an extra $1 million for the platinum was what it was now. And I mean, every credit card is going to be different, but it's that type of thing that people don't pay attention to. Like they think, oh, I'll just keep putting it on my debit card and no big deal, which is fine. I'm not saying you can't do the credit card thing, but the debit cards don't come with that, depending on your bank and depending on your benefits and stuff like that. But that's so interesting. And then, I mean, as far as your sister, I'm sorry to hear that, first of all, because that's certainly tragic. But isn't it great that she did make that choice at a young age? I
Absolutely.
mean, her,
I was
I'm
like, wait, you have it? You have
right.
like this chance, you know? And she's
Right.
like, the minute she had my nephew, she said, the minute I had Xavier, which is his name, she's like, I
Yeah.
went out and I got it.
Yeah.
And none of us even knew that she did that, you know? But
Right.
thankfully she did, because now she has another daughter and she has a family and she's married.
Right.
And
Now she probably needs more coverage at this point, but something is better than nothing, right? Like that's
absolutely.
really what it is. And she's probably paying like $20 a month. I don't know. I'm just hypothesizing here
She
based on her age.
has, but there's a lot of different life insurance
Right.
policies, right? So term being the cheapest. And what I do a whole like life 101
Right.
with my clients to because a lot it's one of the hardest things out there to navigate because people don't understand it. A lot of times they think it's just the death benefit, you know?
Right.
And
Well,
term,
term is
unfortunately,
usually.
term unfortunately is like renting insurance.
Right.
And you know, at some point, but it is the cheapest form of insurance to be able to get. There's just so many. If you Google like how much life insurance can I get, or like what company should I go with,
Right.
you're gonna get a million things that pop up. And
Oh,
you know,
yes.
I show this little chart of this like little person and then all these like financial outlets, you know, and it's like our clients are so inundated with, you know, financial decisions every day and like advisors saying different things here and there. There's no way to actually navigate, okay, what advice is counterproductive to the advice given by the other? You know,
Right,
does it
right.
even come? So I do make sure to do a whole life 101 with them. And I say, this is term and this is permanent. And here's the two different types of permanents that are out there, you know, the more traditional ones. Unfortunately, her policy. She has the permanent, but it's not the best.
Right.
So I mean, we have to keep an eye on it to make sure that it doesn't lapse at some point. I definitely do sit down with people and I'm like, hey, this is what it is. And then I let the client make the decision, you know,
Right.
because once you have that education, by all means, I would never force anyone to do anything that they don't want to do, that they don't believe in, whatever it is. It's my job to educate you and give you your options,
Right.
you know, and give you my opinion. And then go from there.
You're not Jordan Belfort, right?
But
No. For the listeners that don't know who Jordan Belfort is, he was the Wolf of Wall Street. He was the movie by Martin Scorsese. It's interesting. Like I actually bought his book, and it's a worth a read, because he talks about he had the right idea, but he implemented it wrong, right? Like he implemented it in a way that hurt people, And he said if he could do anything differently, it would be to go back and implement it in a way that helped people instead. And obviously it would have prevented him from going to prison as well. But but I mean, so there's a little self-serving thing on that one. But I think the point is valid, right? Like there's a lot of financial planners out there. I know quite a few, and I have people that I refer others to when they have questions. And so, but you know, not all are created equal, right? Like it's not as simple as saying, you know, and there's the relationship part of it, right? Some people are just better than others. That, I mean, at relationship, I'm not talking like you might be the exact same planner as someone else, like theories and ideas and things of that nature. But you know, it's true that we want to do business with people that we know, like, and trust. And, you know, so anything you can do to build that, right? Like people that get to know you are going to want to do business with you more than not. And I think that's important for entrepreneurs to recognize as well. So let me ask you this. If you could share just one kernel, one nugget of wisdom with someone, like that would not necessarily change their life, but make a change in their life, what would it be?
So I guess I would say a lot of my clients, the reason why they haven't reached out to financial consultant advisor or anything like that is they are embarrassed. Finances are, they're very private for most people, right? And so unfortunately what ends up happening is they create this situation where they're very disorganized and they don't really know what to focus on. And, you know, they don't have even their goals in mind. So one, I would say never be embarrassed about where you're at. I have clients from like one end of the spectrum to the other, you know, so I have ones that are just like normal living paycheck to paycheck. And then I have high net worth, right? And the disorganization is always there for both. So don't think that because somebody makes a lot of money that they're good at managing it. A lot of times they're not. So I guess it's true though, you know? And so it's funny that you brought up Wolf of Wall Street. Cause when I do my, presentations for different groups, I do it for everyone. I've done it at law firms. I do it for realtors. And I always bring that up because he makes a very, I always do that, you know, the scene, right? So when it gets my people to actually pay attention, because they're like, oh, what is she doing? She's right now, you know, but they make a very, very valid point. And he basically just says, you know, the number one rule of Wall Street is nobody knows. They don't know if the stock's going up, down, sideways, in circles. You don't know.
Right.
And so for us, or for my firm, and specifically for myself, while we do want to get you that great rate of return, right? That is also what we strive for. And if your financial advisor isn't struggling to increase your net worth, then you need a new one, right? But you focus very heavily on your rate of savings. Right. And so I would just say, I know this is like a long-winded answer to your question, but I would say one, don't be embarrassed about your finances. Two, always consult with somebody. There, I have so many people who are like, nope, I do it myself. That's fine, but you also have a business to run, or you have a family to take care of, or you know, this is typically not something that you are doing yourself every day. And it doesn't hurt to sit down with someone and get some insight, you know? And if you're already doing everything that they tell you, then by all means, keep doing what you're doing.
Right.
But I'm going to say 99.9% of the time you're not, you know, there's a lot of things that you don't, you know. And I always tell people, I'm like, you don't know what you don't know when you don't know what you don't know.
Right, exactly.
Well, you know, so I say, don't be embarrassed. Always consult with someone. Everyone starts somewhere. And at the end of the day, being financially organized can take so much stress out of your life and can help you, you know, reach the goals that you have in mind. So.
Right. And I think it's worth talking about. In fact, a friend of mine, a realtor actually, who's in my office, we share an office together, who I'm trying to get on my show, but he keeps dodging my stuff.
Realtor.
Yeah, he's so busy.
You do it.
You know, if you look at the truly wealthy people, right? Like I'm talking like multiple millions, not just singles, right? Like, and I'm not judging singles because I'm nowhere near that. But if you look at the wealthy people and you see how they manage things, right? They have their lawyer, they have their CPA, they have their financial advisor, they have these people that are experts and that know what they're doing. They don't manage that stuff, right? Now, should they trust and verify? Absolutely, right? Like, you don't want to put, like, speaking from definite experience, having worked at banks and having worked in law and all that other stuff, you want to trust people, but you also want to verify, right? Like, no Bernie Madoffs, right? Like, you want to stay away from people that promise absurd things. And so, you know, you've got to pass a sniff test. You got to pay tangentially to the market and say, hey, if my stock, if my portfolio, whatever, if that's where you're at, is earning better than the market, great. Why? You know, and or if it is, wonderful, but is there something that I need to be aware of, right? Like, so you need to pay attention tangentially. But getting lost in the nitty-gritty, every wealthy person has their advisors, right? They make decisions based upon the whole of that advice because they pay experts to do the right thing for them. And I think when you get out of this mindset, it's when you get into an abundance mindset, right, it makes way more sense for you to be the CEO of Taylor Darcy than it is to be the burger flipper at the bottom of Taylor Darcy, right? Like, and so really when you're hiring a financial advisor like yourself, or you're hiring an attorney, you're saying that your time is so valuable that you should be doing what's most important to you, because there's only one thing in this world that you can't get back, and that's time. That's it. Like, you can always make more money, right? I mean, I'm not suggesting that's easy some days, but I'm saying that you can make more money. And so where should you spend your money? You should spend your money on things that generate time for yourself, right? And if I'm hiring Ashley here to do my finances and financial planning and whatnot, then that frees me up to do the things that I value most, spending time with my family, enjoying trips, whatever it is that I want to do. And time is infinitely more valuable in that respect. And let's face it, if you love doing financial planning, then why wouldn't I want you to do it over me to do it that doesn't want it or doesn't love it, right? Like, if you love it, then you're going to do a better job at it than someone who doesn't, because you see this the puzzle pieces, and you get to move things and put things into place. And it's a little bit like Tetris, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a little bit like, you know, like a puzzle, right? Like, you're putting all these things to give you help people with their full picture, right? What is it that you want to, what type of life do you want to live? And as an attorney, that's part of what I do as well, right? Like, I help people so they can live their life, and I do the stuff that, the attorney stuff, right? So that they can manage their business more effectively with protections in place for them. And so I think it's so important that people recognize, if you want to have the abundance mindset, like Warren Buffett, for instance, he doesn't do his own taxes. You know, he doesn't do his own planning. He might talk to his analysts, and he might talk to his investment people, but he doesn't do the actual work. He just is he's more like the lighthouse, right? Like, he's there to direct and guide. He's not there to do the sailing of the ship. And so one of the things that I see a lot of entrepreneurs is they're so busy trying to sail their ship that they forget that they need to pay attention to the rocks. And as CPAs and financial planning and attorneys, that's what we do. We deal with the rocks, right? We help guide you. And so you can make a decision rather than hitting those rocks and hitting those problems. So
exactly. Yeah. I completely agree.
It's been so great to have you on. I wanted to ask you a couple of fun questions so my listeners can get to know you better. So I'm just going to, these are just fun, so take them for what they will. First one is, what do you value most in your friends?
Honesty.
Honesty. Okay. That's a good one. I like that. I think that's so talked about and not talked about, right? Like, people say it and then they don't necessarily do it. So there's always
I agree.
And then Next one is, which living person do you most admire?
Oh, I mean, it might be a little cliche, but my mom.
No, that's okay.
I think there's something to be said about, your parents. And I feel like I was very fortunate to get both of mine. Both of them are extremely intelligent. They're both, my dad also is very hardworking. And you learn from the mistakes that they've made in their lives, and they're able to give you their two cents on how they
Right.
think, give you advice on stuff. And so it's just, she's definitely, someone I look up to, both my parents, my dad as well. I looked up to him as well. So it's, yeah, I would say
Oh,
that.
that's nice. That's sweet. I thought you were gonna say Betty White, but she's not living anymore. So,
I love Betty
I know,
White.
right?
And
She's awesome.
the funny part too is, so my grandmother has passed away now, but she, her and my grandfather lived with us for a short period of time, and we watched Golden Girls like almost every night. So that is definitely a thing.
What's really crazy? Oh, what was it? There was a show that I was watching that said that these people were 50 when they filmed it, and that these people were 50 when they filmed it as well. And it was the Golden Girls and some other show. I can't remember
Yeah.
who it was, but or what show it was, but it blew me away. I was like, okay, that does not look like 50. And what's even
Right.
crazier is Bea Arthur was actually younger than what's her face? Her supposed daughter. Like they made her out.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
I think Rue Mc No, that wasn't Rue McClanahan. Oh, I can't remember her name. Anyway, the daughter that was supposed to be in on the show. So it was the mother daughter and then Betty White and whatnot. And it's interesting because if you look at their ages, at least last I looked, maybe I'm misremembering it, but yeah, I thought that was so funny because you're like, really? She was
Yeah.
the mother playing, she was the mother playing anyway, and she was younger. So last question for you. If you were to die tomorrow, what little thing would you regret not doing?
Little thing would I regret not doing? I feel like there's so many things that I am like working towards right now. I'm 35, so there's a lot of things that I'm working towards that I think will end up happening. So I don't think there's any, it's such a hard question because I don't think that there's any like one thing. Let's see. So I have such a soft spot for, and one of my goals, I don't even know if I should say this out loud because if I don't end up doing it, I don't get held. Like you said, you wanted to do this, but I have such a soft spot for older people who don't have, when I going through what I did with my dad, whenever I would have to take him to the hospital or stuff like that, I would take him to the doctor's office. There were so many older people that would come in on like these buses, they have like the transportation and stuff like that. And they didn't have like the family members to like help them like my dad did. And God only knows what my dad probably would end up homeless had he not had family, right? My heart really goes out to the elderly community and also being able to get the resources, because I was the one who was like, all right, Social Security, what do we have? What resources are there available to people who need, eventually I needed to put my dad in a nursing home and finding the resources available for that. It's just, it's all very convoluted and very hard to navigate. So at some point in time in my life, I would love to put together a foundation where that is something where it's like kind of like a one-stop shop, like, hey, come to us and we'll do everything for you. Or we'll, like this is what, it's not like a one size fits all thing, right? Because everyone has something going on. But I would love to be able to be like that hub of resources for people like in my situation, or even in my dad. There's no way that my dad would have been able to be like, okay, I'm gonna call. My dad still tried to get a phone book. Okay. By the time, by the time he got to the age of when he was passing away. Yeah, I remember he called me and he's like, Ashley, how do I order a phone book? And I was like, I don't think those exist anymore. I'm not really sure.
That's
So,
awesome.
I would love to create a foundation where I could just be there and, help people navigate that very hard time in life. So that's something that, yeah, I hope that I'm able to accomplish that before I pass.
That's interesting because one of the things that I would love to do. And I don't know that there's a way, because of the way the laws are currently set up, would to have like to have a executive team of people for businesses. So like, for instance, have a financial planner, have a CPA, have an attorney, have a marketing officer, chief marketing officer, have all of the executive level positions, but it'd be fractional. The problem is with fee sharing for attorneys, right? Like, we're our own little weird silo. And I hate that, because I think that it doesn't take into effect the other areas of a business. And so when I was, thinking of starting stuff, what I would love to do is help small businesses that way, right? Like, provide fractional, management services for those businesses, so that maybe they can get access to the knowledge that we have sooner, rather than later. And as a collaborative effort, right? Like, having a one-stop shop for a collaborative effort to build your business, rather than having, okay, you have an attorney here, you have a CPA here, you have a financial planner there, you have a marketing officer there, fill in the blank, right? Like, all of these different things, and they all don't talk to each other. And so that's a real problem, because what might be great for marketing might be terrible for legal, right? And what might be great for legal is terrible for financial planning. And so having this like team of people that we all sit down and we're advisory, they get to be the lighthouse, and we get to be we get to be the showing them the rocks, right? And so that's something that I would love to do. I just don't know how to structure that would make that sense. So.
I love that you say that, because when I sit down with clients, that's basically what I tell them. I say we act
Right.
as the quarterback. We act as, we sit on the phone with your CPA, we sit on the phone with your attorney, and like we do essentially exactly what you're saying. Like we
Right.
work with all of your advisors. If you already have ones put in place, great. We never want to replace anyone. But if you don't have the proper ones put in place, great. We have people that we work with, and we make sure, like, hey, these are our clients' goals. How are we going to get them there?
Right.
Or for a CPA, hey, I'm not a CPA, but I did review my client's taxes. I think we're missing something. Why did we do it that way? You're right on track with that. No one talks to each other. And I always preface it with people, the only experience that I would have is, again, going back to my dad, he had a neurologist, a pulmonologist, he had a kidney specialist, he had everyone. And at one point, one doctor prescribed medication and another doctor prescribed a medication. And I went to the pharmacy and she's like, yeah, he cannot take those together, and it's because nobody, although they have all the information, nobody was talking to each other. There's not like a round table that everyone sits down as like, okay, here's the patient. What are we doing? It's not House. Although
No,
I don't know if you're
it's
that show,
not.
but it's a great show.
It
And
is
so
a great show.
I was so thankful for that pharmacist being so thorough with her business like that, because God forbid I would have went home and I would have gave my dad that medication and that would have been on me. Oh, no, I mean, I would have felt like it had been on me,
Right,
because I was like
of
putting
course.
it
It's
to him.
not on you. You're not the doctor or the
Right,
pharmacist, right?
exactly.
Right, yeah.
So I just love that you say that, because there is such a need for that, and that is something that my firm does strive to do.
Right.
We'll say there are certain professionals that don't like to work that way because they don't like to feel like they're being told what to do, and then I'm like, that's not
Right.
what the goal is. The goal is to
No.
work together, but there are
Exactly.
some people who don't see that. So I love that you said that.
Yeah. Well, I think that deals more with that professional's pride more than it has to deal with, because if I can't have a valid argument for something, then it shouldn't be, right? Like, that's the problem, is that it's probably a weakness in their argument more than it is a weakness in the plan.
Absolutely.
Because what if we can prevent and actually help a company grow, because they're not subject to the same things as what they would have been otherwise. And we can talk about real growth strategies within the confines of law and all the other things that they all intersect, which is why I got my MBA and JD, was because of the intersection between business and law, right? Like, there's a lot of intersection there. So, Ashley, it has been so great to have you on here. I'm so glad that you agreed to join me. I sincerely appreciate the help that you've offered my audience. I look forward to potentially having you on again if you'd like.
Awesome.
But in the meantime, thank you so much, and I look forward to If people are wanting to reach out to you to discuss financial planning for themselves or their business, how can they find you?
Okay, so you can email me. I don't know if you're gonna, if you would have this on here or not, but it's ashley.nichols@westpacwealth.com. You can go on my Instagram if you want. It's not a business Instagram. It's just my personal one. So you can kind of see my personal life also. Sure. If you want to shoot me a DM, I'm all for that. I've had clients go that route. My business phone number, 702-415-4839. I have a LinkedIn. So any way you want to reach out, by all means, do so. And I'd love to chat. So
great. And are you able to help people throughout the United States, or is there a geographical area that you're limited to?
No, that is the cool part about our licensing, is like, it's not like the bar where you have to take in every single state, or like, right, you know, you might do multi-bar. I have clients in Indiana. I have clients in Vegas. I shift my time between the two. I have clients in California. So anywhere they are, I have clients in New Mexico. It's anywhere they are, I just pay for the licensing there and call it a day.
Gotcha. Very cool. Very cool. Thank you so much, Ashley, for joining me. I really sincerely appreciate it. And we'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. So that was great. Ashley coming on and discussing financial planning and things that that are relevant to your business. Please don't forget to hit subscribe if you're on YouTube, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear more about things that you're interested in learning about, because again, this is to provide you with value and to help you to think of your business tactically, which means thinking of it with intention rather than just letting things that happen. Until our next episode, we'll see you later.